Hi everyone, my name is Amy Ward. We're gonna get started with the Safe Bars presentation. If you're in here and you're going to be a part of it, would you mind getting a little bit closer since we've got a little bit more of an intimate group going on? If you do need to bounce out in between different sessions, that's totally fine. Please feel free to do so. I know that this one's going for the long haul in between everything, so by all means, if you need to bounce out to go to something else, you're totally fine. Just go ahead and do so. So, all right. Hi. How's everyone doing? Woo! All right, cool. Well, hello, everyone. Once again, my name's Amy Ward. I use the she, her pronouns. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. Got one Baltimore person in here that just walked in. What's up? Yay! I am a hospitality vet. I've been in the industry for over 20 years. I have been primarily in the spirits world, so this is a very humbling experience to be going to this other conference. I speak at a bunch of conferences and go to this one where there's a whole community of people I have not yet met, which is awesome because I love making friends. I talk to strangers. I'm in hospitality for a reason, right? So I work with a group called Safe Bars. We do bystander intervention training, sexual assault prevention, and de-escalation training for breweries, bars, restaurants, whatever it is that's in the hospitality world. And Safe Bars has been around for a little over 10 years, maybe 12 years, but I've been teaching with them for 6. So my journey within hospitality started when I was 14 years old. I was a dishwasher in a crab house in Edgewater, Maryland, which is probably the most Maryland thing you can possibly be doing. And then over the next 20-plus years, I have done regular bar world. I've worked in coffee. I got to pour beer for a hot second. And then I've managed and run a bunch of bars otherwise. And then my actual, like, education is in exercise physiology. So I've got a couple degrees in kinesiology, meaning that I care about your bodies probably more than you do. And in the last couple of years, about 6 years ago, I started a business called The Health Tender, where I basically work to provide resources for people in our industry, hospitality world inclusively, how to work your bodies a little bit better, your bodies and your mind, so you can stay in here for the long haul, because there's certainly not enough attention that goes towards health and wellness in our industry. Thankfully, this is what this entire pre-conference is about. It's talking about that and diversity, equity, and inclusion. So that's a super important thing to me, as is what Safe Bars does. So Safe Bars' mission is to create safe, equitable spaces within the hospitality world so your partners, your staff feel good about being in there and your guests feel good about being in there. Because that mission very much aligns with my own passion for health and wellness, that's why I got so involved with it. And so my journey with Safe Bars has been beautiful and long and wonderful since then. What we're going to do today is talk a little bit about what Safe Bars does. I'm going to kind of give you a mini version of what we do. Normally our trainings are about 2.5 hours long, so we don't have that amount of time, but I want to give you all a little opportunity to do some interactive work with everything that we're talking about today. And if you're interested in learning more about Safe Bars and doing something in your own bars, restaurants, breweries, whatever it might be, I have cards up there and I'd love to talk to you about that. So before we get started, let's go through some agreements. This is something that we always do within Safe Bars. The first thing is prioritizing self-care. There is going to be some heavier topics that we talk about in this presentation. With that being said, I want to make sure that you are taking care of yourself before, during, after. This was one of the questions that was brought up, and I just talked to the woman who left out, and I was like, I want to talk to you and answer that question about what do you do when you're talking about these, like, trauma-informed kind of trauma things on a regular basis. And it is self-care. And self-care, unfortunately, is a very McDonaldized kind of word at this point in time, and it's not about manis, pedis, and shit like that. Sorry, let me skip to one of my agreements. Is everybody okay with a little light cussing in here? Thank you. I drop F-bombs. It is my verb. It's my adjective. It's my everything. So thank you very much for that. You're the only person in charge of your self-care. You're the one that knows what you need. You're the one that knows when your body temperature is elevated, when you're getting a little nervous, when things just start feeling fucking weird. So without any questions asked, please take some water, ground your feet, give yourself a hug, walk out of the room, do a lap back there. You can do jumping jacks. You'll be a person after my own heart. Whatever it is that you need to do for self-care, please do that. Confidentiality. You'll notice that there is no video camera in this particular session, and I did request that because in order for us to have really candid discussions about creating safer spaces, specifically within the brewery world here, we need to be able to share and talk about what's been going on, what we've been seeing, and what we want to fix. So you can talk about anything that I say today. You can share the information with the world. I want you to do that. You can talk about my hair. You can talk about my sweet style. You can talk about how fucking awkward I am. That's all great. If there are stories that are shared in this room from the people that are here, that is something that stays here, right? So the basic premise of our confidentiality is what is learned leaves and what is shared stays, okay? Taking space and making space, I figure if we're all in the world of hospitality, we're generally gregarious people. I am a loud person that loves to talk all the time and volunteer when there are things like this going on. So if you're like me and you're taking up a lot of space, that's totally fine. But leave some room for the quiet people that are in here. Shout out to all the introverts. I'm an extrovert. I collect you. I love you. I love quiet people. I like to make them talk. But I want everybody to feel comfortable talking in here. I'm not going to pick on you. I'm not going to do anything. But I do want you to leave room for other people. Pick on you, meaning like ask you to read things. I'm never going to pick on anybody. That is just kind of the goal, is to have everybody sharing in here as they need to. In terms of the challenge zone, we live in our beautiful little comfort zone here. We live in this tiny little bubble where everything's perfect and wonderful all the time. Social media and the internet make sure that the algorithms show you only things that make you happy as well, so you get stuck in this comfort zone all the time. What we're hoping to do in here, I imagine if you're here, you're invested in this topic anyways, but we want to step out of that comfort zone into the challenge zone. The challenge zone is our opportunity and our space where we can learn new concepts, take ideas away, and be able to challenge some of the things that we may have preconceived notions about. That is our goal. Get to that space so we can learn new things. What we want to avoid is the freakout zone, and that's when you're like full Kermit, either physically or in your brain, and you're just like kind of going back to that panic state. You're going into that panic state. So in that case, if we get to that freakout zone, I want you to go right back to self-care and do whatever it is necessary that helps you get to a more calm space. Everything that we do here is optional. I am going to give you all a couple role plays today. It's exactly how I expect that to go when I say that. But people get to actually practice the skills that we're talking about when we're learning about how to safely intervene in situations where either our staff is uncomfortable with something a patron is doing, patrons are doing something where one of them is uncomfortable, or there's like a patron to staff interaction that's not great, right? So we all want to be able to have practical application of how we're going to intervene safely. In terms of parking lot questions, if something, please feel free to ask questions as you're going along. If you want to shout it out, I don't mind. I'm very good at monitoring multiple things at the same time. That is one of the benefits of having ADHD. Multitasking is my world. So ask questions as you have them. If it's something that doesn't really fit with where we are in the agenda, we'll save it for the end. That's all. Any other agreements that we would like to come to? We have added on the ad lib of casual light cussing. Otherwise, are we good with everything that's up here? Raise your hand, please, for me. Thank you. Love that. Cool. So why are you here? Why do we have bystander intervention as a topic that we want to talk about? This is the one time you're going to see me read off of a slide. I'm breaking the cardinal rule of that, obviously. We don't do that for PowerPoints normally, but research shows that the environment around an aggressor can make a difference in their behavior and help prevent sexual harassment and assault, right? So we're talking about sexual harassment and assault in the hospitality world today. This means that you all, bar, restaurant, brewery, distillery staff, as well as sales teams, suppliers, distributors, events people, brand teams, all y'all are in a perfect position to establish a safe and respectful environment where those behaviors aren't tolerated. when there was another person that was in here talking about how they live in a small town where they see signs that say no critical race theory or things like that. All of that's bullshit, right? So we do have the understanding, like, why are we going to try to force the concept of respect and dignity in terms of into everybody's brain? I still believe that we can fight a little bit, and that's because you all can set the standard for what happens at your respective establishments. You get to decide what guest interaction should look like. They do say that the customer is always right. A lot of people have strong feelings about that. I say you get to decide, that is correct, but you get to decide who the customer is, right? So you can set the standard for how things should be happening at your breweries. So that is education that can still be taken out into the world. I believe that through community education and literacy, we are able to break through into those people that normally would not be able to see those sides of the story, where there's an option for learning. So this is why we're doing it, right? So we're talking about the different ways, different problematic behaviors that we can be looking for, and really safe, non-confrontational ways in which we can intervene. How familiar are people with this topic? How familiar are you with aggression and assault happening around you in the general world, or specifically within your places of work, being in hospitality, being in the beer industry? We feel kind of familiar with things, okay? Every 68 seconds, someone in the United States is sexually assaulted. We've already been talking for about, I don't know, technically this started 22 minutes ago. That's a lot of fucking people, right? It is a pervasive problem that has to be addressed. We have the ability to do that. We're in a perfect position because we are the people that provide experiences for guests as they come into our breweries. Are most people in here, like, raise your hand if you are HR specific, okay? Brewer, taproom employee. What else do we have?
Sales.
Perfect.
Owner.
Community engagement. What were you going to say?
Oh, owner.
Owner as well. Perfect. All right. All of us have the ability to shape these experiences for people. We wouldn't have gotten into hospitality if we didn't love creating something unique for people. We are natural hosts. We love to have people in our places. We love to make sure that people are having a good time. We also happen to make really delicious products that we want to share with the world on top of it, right? So all of this, it impacts all of us, and we all have an opportunity to get involved in some capacity. If you think that because I'm not on the taproom floor that it doesn't apply to you, that's false. Everybody has the opportunity to become a bystander and to be able to speak up and intervene when they see something going wrong. So you can take this, you can use it in your businesses, but you can use it in the larger world too. The bystander effect is something where people have like a diffusion of responsibility. We assume that if there are other people that are around us seeing the same thing, somebody else has already taken care of it. Somebody has intervened. And that's not the truth, right? But we do the bystander intervention training because it creates that community education. It starts to knock down a lot of those preconceived notions about it, getting involved when we're taught to mind our own business. We have a lot of different things that prevent us from speaking up, whether it's pure safety standards or you were taught to mind your own business, so don't get involved. Somebody else is taking care of it, whatever it is. But all research shows is that bystander intervention is good for the community. It helps to decrease that. It decreases the amount of problematic behaviors that happen because people know that that stuff is not welcome. People start to feel safer. They have more conversations about it. It's like the most positive snowball effect that you could possibly think of, right? So we'll do a couple more facts before we start getting into our first exercise. Ooh, that's a fun color disbursement. So this is talking about harassment in the industry. Some of our latest reports show that from self-reported data is everything that you're going to get today. Two-thirds of women employed in restaurants Have been harassed at work, and it says that 66% of women and 44% of men all say that they have been harassed at work. Do you agree with these numbers? Do you think they're too low? Do you think they're too high? Shout it out. What do you think?
Too low.
It's fucking 100% across the board, isn't it? I started when I was 14 as a dishwasher, and I heard vile shit from a line cook that day. That day, he's like hands deep in coleslaw describing to me what it feels like, and you can kind of fill in the blanks from there. I'm like, oh, that's fine. I don't know what that means. I'm 14. At that point, I was innocent. Now it's not so much, but like, oh, right? So it's pervasive. It's been going on forever. This is 100% around the board. Something important to note about all these statistics as well, nothing is going to be inclusive of non-binary people. The research is not robust enough, and I'm really hopeful that it's also from a 2019 study that this is done. Like, everything from the pandemic kind of threw off a lot of work that we were doing for research. But I'm very hopeful that the data will start to show more inclusive numbers as we get things for 2022 and beyond. Additionally, the same 2019 study said that 81% of women, those who identified as women, and 43% of those who identified as men have been sexually harassed verbally, so street harassment. Everybody kind of familiar with what street harassment is or the concept of that? Someone just shouting at you when you're walking down the road minding your own GD business. It's like, I just wanted to go get a Slurpee. I did not want to be catcalled. I'm wearing sweatpants and a raggedy t-shirt, and my hair's a mess, so, like, whatever. So it's pervasive, right? It's not uncommon. It is so incredibly common and so problematic and something that we need to continue to talk about. What is most important for everybody in here? It doesn't matter how you get involved, it just matters that you do get involved. And we're going to talk about the multitude of ways in which you can do that, and it does not require you having to, like, go chase after anybody. Obviously, we want it to be non-physical, non-confrontational, non-anything, but you can get involved. It happens in every single direction, whether it's patron to staff to staff, or staff to patron. There's always going to be an opportunity for you to disrupt what's going on and make sure that people can continue having a safe experience in your establishment. Feel good so far? Okay. So the next thing, just as a little note, you heard me use my pronouns when I introduced myself. Is everybody kind of familiar with pronouns and what they are? Or were you high in high school when they talked about that in English class? Because most of us were as well. That's okay, too. So pronouns, I use she, her. Pronouns are the way that we refer to somebody when they're not present with us, right? So if it was Amy is no longer in the room, she went to go use the bathroom, right? This is incredibly important because people want to be affirmed in the way that they identify, and they deserve that because that's part of that dignity and respect that we were talking about, like the whole premise of the conference, this portion of it, right? So treating people with dignity and respect and affirming their identity with the way that they want to be called. So please make sure that if you are a person who uses more common pronouns, common from prior world of like she, her, or he, him, please use your pronouns when you introduce yourself to people. That way, other people who may identify some other way introduce themselves to you, and then you know exactly how you're going to be talking to them and referring to them when they are no longer in the room, or if you're talking to them about them to somebody else, right? So let's get in the habit of using that. Everything that I'm going to be talking about today, I'm going to refer to people that commit acts of aggression as the aggressors, and then people who are on the receiving end of that aggression as targets. We do this using our best gender-neutral language because we know that sexual assault can be experienced by anybody and committed by anybody, but statistics all show us that the majority of aggression is committed predominantly by men, and it's experienced predominantly by those who identify as women or in the LGBTQIA community. So that is why I'm using that. You will also notice that I'm not going to use victim or survivor. Target feels, they are the target of aggression, right? The person is a target of aggression. Everybody chooses to be, a lot of people choose to identify in different ways if they have experienced aggression in their time. So I use that more general and neutral term. That way nobody feels any way put out in any way, shape, or form. So that's that. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to do is read a couple stories to you. I'm going to read these stories out loud, and what I want you to think about is if you hear problematic behaviors that are in those stories. When you hear them, you're going to think about what it is that you're hearing, something that like sounds off to you or something that sounds problematic, and then I'm going to ask you, where does it belong on this board? Is it on the annoying side, which is on the left? Is it dangerous, which is in the middle? Or is it on the right side and could kill you? Okay? So I'm going to try to see if I can get clicked over to my link here using a Jamboard. All right. Is there any way that I can get that part projected on? Not asking the right person. I'm so sorry. That's okay. We're going to use our imagination here. You're going to pretend that I'm making little post-its and placing them onto this board here. But I'm going to start with one story. Normally, I would have people read these around the room, but this is your kind of introduction to Safe Bar, so I don't want to put you in kind of a precarious situation there. But we'll start with some beer industry stories, okay? At my first brewing job, I looked to my head brewer slash boss for advice. He was a much older man, and people warned me that he could be creepy, but I thought to myself, how bad could it be? It wasn't long after that that he began to get very inappropriate with me, reaching into my pants pockets to borrow my tools instead of just asking me to pass them to him and becoming obsessed with my body. He made me so uncomfortable for months. I wish I could go back and tell my 23-year-old self she didn't have to put up with that shit. To this day, I regret not standing up for myself. Anything you hear from those stories that is problematic? Shout it out to me. Who wants to start? Yep, talking about women's bodies, right? Talking about anybody's bodies. Anybody's. Yep, so there's complacency with that. So, yep. Touching without consent. So, those three things, let's pause for a second. Talking about other people's bodies, where would you put that onto the spectrum? Annoying, okay? Being warned, knowing that this is complicit behavior. Up the line, somewhere in between annoying and dangerous, okay? Maybe possibly with an arrow going towards the right. Non-consensual touching. Dangerous? Great. Imagine there's post-its going all over here, right? Good. These are real stories, right? These are real stories that have been given to us with permission to share so we can help understand the problem. I'm going to continue reading a couple more stories. If you feel comfortable sharing anything that you have witnessed or experienced, you're more than welcome to, but it's not required, okay? We do the story so it feels more comfortable being able to talk about other things that are not related to us. I had a dude threaten to do terrible things to me at a beer festival because last call happened and I can no longer give him his 6-ounce sample. He went from telling me I was beautiful when he thought he could get a drink to telling me I was a stupid fucking whore and that he'd do terrible things to me for a sample of beer. Yep, visual gagging, very, very appropriate response. Dangerous and could kill you? Yep, threatening. Yep. Agreed. Anyone else? Has anybody been in a beer festival and kind of felt this kind of vibe? Yeah. I'm sorry that you have. That's shitty regardless. No matter who you are and how you experience it, that's fucking shitty, and I'm sorry. I'm going to give you a longer one that's not specific to brewery industry specifically, but it's still very much gender, misogyny, giving you a takeaway of one of the things. So I worked in the restaurant industry for 11 years, starting as a server and ending as a general manager. I was propositioned by customers, molested by coworkers, harassed by supervisors, and once even fired for being pregnant. I've sat in offices with a male management team and had my looks and their suppositions regarding my sex life discussed in detail. I've been sent to handle difficult or displeased male clients and vendors, and have been prompted to use my charms to protect and promote the business in these situations. As a top-level manager, I had my qualifications called into question based on gender, tolerated inappropriate sexual speech and innuendo, and on many occasions been uneasy in the company of male peers and even subordinates, especially in a deserted restaurant after closing. I've had my shoulders rubbed and my knees and legs touched without my permission, and by men I would never even call friends, even as a married woman. I've left the industry permanently, but I have having terrible trouble finding a job in another field with similar pay or that level of responsibility. It's been a steep price and lost income for our family, but I would not work in bars or restaurants anymore. Yeah. Yeah. For the sake of what we're trying to unpack, let's talk about the specifics in there. What things do we find to be dangerous? Pick one of the laundry list.
Again, inappropriate contact,
persisting after hearing no, maybe, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're talking about an 11-year span in which they've experienced these things, right? What other specific things in there?
Stayed for pay.
Stayed for pay? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, and for both of those things, where would you find them on the behavior, or on the spectrum? Okay, so staying for the pay.
I would say.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry that you were in that environment where that occurred. I am so happy that she is okay, survived, at least survived. Obviously, none of this is an isolated incident. PTSD is a very real thing. These things do not happen as a one-time stamp on this spectrum. They stay with us for the long haul. And it's not a, I hope that there wasn't that like internalizing of the blame for where you could have inserted yourself, but more of an eye-opening and awareness towards all the ways in which we could have gotten involved. Yeah, to actually have action versus retaliation, like you can't work here, you're creating drama, like the victim shaming, blaming narrative that we've heard February. It's like, oh God, gotta go. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. That is a great question. And so because this is kind of like a half version of it, after this comes a quick quiz, and I'm going to give you a little validation on what you're thinking right now. So part of this training is also kind of getting the idea of the creeper in the corner out of our head. 90% of assaults are committed by people that we know. Partners, acquaintances, coworkers, family friends. 9 out of 10. Right? So that makes it so that our vetting of security, our vetting of security measures, needs to be more critically looked at, and we be more proactive so we don't have the reactive thing of finding out after the fact that this is a person who's doing that. So your gut feeling on that is absolutely correct. It is 90% of the people that we know. So those people who are coming into our establishments as well, not just in terms of, we saw that there's a multitude of ways in which we can get involved. It's not just between patrons. It can be between staff. But when it comes to patrons, those people coming into our establishments, we cannot make an assumption that two people who walk in together are totally fine, right? We can't assume that everything is going to be fine just because they came in together. We can't assume that everything is fine because people have worked together for so long or this person's been with you for 20 years. That's no longer acceptable. It is a systemic issue. Thank you so much for sharing that because it brings up a lot of very poignant issues. Once again, knowing that 90% of the assaults are committed by people that we know, also that there is the threat of escalation, right? So the next thing I would normally do if we were doing the full presentation, once we're sharing stories and we can see like a lot of the different things that are coming up on this board, we're talking about the ways in which these things are connected. Number one, there's a threat of escalation. Things can go from the annoying category all the way to could kill you in a very quick amount of time. It is safest for us to intervene when something's in that annoying category, but it does not mean we cannot get involved afterwards. It means that safety has to be the primary factor. It's like put your mask on before you put the mask on for everybody else. You have to take care of yourself, assess the situation to make sure it's safe to intervene. But we can de-escalate all those things back down towards that annoying category. We just have to find a way that makes sense and is safe for us to get involved. And we're going to get to that, the strategies in just a second. The other part of where we know, like you also brought up the fact that there was non-consensual things in a lot of the stories. So anything that would go up onto this board would be without consent. If it was consensual, touching, anything, whatever it is, it wouldn't be up on that board. Consent is everything. Consent is super awesome. Consent can be revoked at any point in time. No is a complete answer. These are all things that we have to like continue to lather, rinse, repeat in our brain. The other part that you brought up was the dynamics of power. Power is so heavily involved in everything that we're talking about when it comes to sexual assault prevention and sexual aggression in the first place. Sexual aggression happens because an aggressor has found a target that they believe that they are in a higher position or authority than. And this could be based upon gender, perceived sexual orientation, manager, subordinate, man, woman, straight, gay, whatever it is, there is a large amount of power dynamics that are involved in everything dealing with sexual aggression and assault. That doesn't mean we don't get involved. It means that we have to disrupt that behavior so they know that that power stance that they think that they have doesn't actually exist. All right? The misogyny and the gender-based violence that happens in our industry has been allowed to go on for so long because people haven't talked about it, because people haven't disrupted the narrative that's been allowed to kind of go on for so long. Is anybody a Letterkenny fan in here? Bad gas travels fast in a small town. Your industry is huge, but it's still small. That means that we need to be talking about these instances where they occur and finding and creating systems where we can report safely so we know that those behaviors cannot be allowed to continue, so they won't be tolerated, and people know that that behavior does not have a fucking home here, right? It's been allowed to go on for so long because there may have been threats or coercion that have prevented people from speaking up. I'm going to keep saying this over and over again, but the victim blaming and shaming narrative where people make everything go back on the target. Like, well, what did you do? What did you do to ask for that? What were you wearing? Why were you drinking? What was going on? Fuck that noise. Nobody deserves to be aggressed upon. We should be allowed to walk around wearing whatever the fuck we want, doing whatever the fuck we want, being happy, harmonious people without being assaulted or aggressed upon. Nothing about that is okay. So we must talk about it. That's why this conference, that's why this portion of the conference, that's why this opportunity to talk about this exists. Us being able to break down those behaviors that have been tolerated for too long and saying no more. All right? The other part where we were talking about 90% of the assaults that occur are committed by people that we know. So we know that we need to take seriously if we hear something about a security person might have been slightly inappropriate. That needs to be addressed immediately. We need to take seriously and watch the entire event unfold in our spaces when a couple comes in together. Also, are you only looking at man-woman presenting couples? Are you giving appropriate attention to people who might be two people who present as women, two people who present as men? Do you even know if somebody is a non-binary couple that's in there? You don't. But you have all humans coming into your space who all deserve to be treated with the same level of dignity and respect. So this is an opportunity for us to also challenge our preconceived notions about the people that are coming in to our establishments. Other data is going to show you that it is people in the LGBTQIA community who are more heavily aggressed upon. In the data where we talked about the percentage of people who identify as men and women who have been assaulted, that's mainly gay, bisexual, and trans people in the male category. Again, not enough robust data. I really wish and hope that they get their shit together so we can see more things. Trans women of color are the most heavily aggressed upon and most severely aggressed upon population. They are the most vulnerable. Are you giving those people the attention that they deserve? We might not be. So if we rechange and reevaluate our brains to look at everybody like a unique human that deserves the level of safety and respect that we're trying to create in our space, that is what's going to help us. Does that feel good? So we're able to learn, we're able to talk about the problems, but we're also able to challenge our own brains so we know that we're rethinking how we're looking at people when they come into our establishments. Okay? Any other problematic behaviors that you all want to share? I have a lot more stories, but I feel like we can have a lot more time for discussion than this. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Like, everything, the fact that we're still here 2+ years later after dealing with all that shit, like, good for us, number one, because it was awful. We had to create a separate de-escalation training based upon mask usage. It's a power thing, right? You're infringing upon my rights because you're making me wear a mask. And there's every other thing in the world that they say that is being, like, atrocities are being committed towards them because they have to wear a mask. People are being killed because they are black, right? So, like, I don't really care about you having to wear a piece of cloth on your face right now. It doesn't actually matter to me. We created a whole slew of that kind of training to be like, so sorry, it is because of, you know, Gotta do this in order for us to keep the brewery open. Gotta do it for this. Gotta do it for that. Like, teaching people how to blame the man as a way to deflect on that. Finding a way to make a connection with people. Learning how to listen, even though we do all of the listening as well, because half the time people just want to talk and vent, but it's directed at us and it feels personal, even though it's not personal. Even though it's not personal for them, it also impacts us emotionally, mentally. Being in this industry already as a whole, like, you are an essential worker. Here's the thing. You are an essential worker. You stayed open during the pandemic. In some capacity, maybe you were closed for some amount of time, but, like, we were still in bars and restaurants and breweries. We were still serving the public. We were still providing a service that they can't do for themselves at home. And it was taken out on us, right? So people who don't work in this environment don't understand that kind of impact and what we deal with. But we were doing a whole lot in the way of de-escalation to try to get people to resonate with us, like understand what we needed to do in order to get the mask situation under control, offer them a series of different alternative solutions. You can go outside for this. You can enjoy your beer here if you don't want to wear this. We can send you home with a six-pack, like find troubleshooting, right? So finding any way to like de-escalate it, bring it back down to that annoying category, and still try to create that guest experience, because it's good for business, our health, everything. Like, it is safety, it is health related, it is business related. It all has that. Yeah, it fucking sucks. I'm so sorry. Isn't this horrible? We should all do our part so we can kill this virus. Da-da-da-da-da. Like, if finding a way to, like, educate people without coming off lectury and feeling like they are being made to feel stupid, like, it's all a very delicate balance. So, like, those flashbacks of that PTSD from super, super mass pandemic times, like, very much was scary and very much put another level of fear in our day-to-day work basis. So, you know, that's, again, why talking about this and making sure that we're sharing ways in which we can be proactive and the ways in which we can intervene, de-escalate, is also important. So thank you all for sharing those things. Yes. Absolutely. And so at the very end, let's hold on to that for a second, because we're going to talk about responsiveness. Like, what happens when somebody says, hey, this person is bothering me, how to actually handle that in a way that is helpful for the person who's been aggressed upon, and for you as the person that they have come to, and for the business as a whole. And again, sorry I don't have like the stickies that are popping up here, but thank you all for sharing your own stories. Thank you for taking away the things that you heard in the stories that I read out loud. The biggest thing, the biggest takeaways, is knowing the ways in which these are connected. Again, they're non-consensual. They're all based in power dynamics. They are all based in gender or perceived gender. And it is something that all, like, the people who are committing the acts of aggression, it is a power thing for them, whether it's subconscious or not, whether it's, like, very overt, I don't like women, so I'm going to do this to them, or it's a learned behavior that's been ingrained upon them. The same way in which we react to these situations is in the same basis, because we've been socialized from a very early upbringing how to conduct ourselves. It can be based upon your gender, and it also can be based upon where you grew up, how your parents were brought up, and how they tell you to conduct yourselves. So all of those things are connected in that way. What's most important about the spectrum is you kind of created this spectrum of violence together by mentioning those things that would be on here. It gives us an opportunity to look at this and see the behaviors and intervene before they escalate. That being the major thing also that they are connected is the escalation. Understanding the spectrum gives us an opportunity as bystanders to intervene before it escalates from annoying to could kill you. And so I talked about that we would be doing like a little mini quiz. This is not actually a quiz. I'm just going to ask you some questions and see what you think. Test your knowledge on this. So 1 in 33 men, and how many in 5 women have reported being sexually harassed in their lifetime? Do you think it's 5 out of 5, 4 out of 5, 3 out of 5, 2 out of 5, 1 out of 5? 4 out of 5 if you did your math right. Does anybody want to shout out another number?
3 out of 5, but I think the real number
is. Okay, 3 out of 5. So it actually is from the stats that we have, from the self-reported stats, it's 1 out of 5. So 1 in 5 women and 1 in 33 men have been sexually harassed, That number also connects to have experienced a attempted or completed sexual assault in their lifetime. Still a lot, even if it's only 1 out of 5. That's still 20% of humans. And that's only just the people who have been able to report. Again, I mentioned this beforehand, that those numbers are the same, if not higher, for LGBTQIA plus community. Trans women of color being the most heavily and severely aggressed upon group. People with multiple marginalized identities, such as any person of color, people who are in the lower socioeconomic status, people with disabilities, people who, honestly, more and more it's coming up, even though this is not reported on here. Regionally, depending on where you come from, like there might be assumptions about who you are or what you are as a human based upon if you're from the South, the North, the whatever, if you have an accent, if you don't, right? All of those things tie in. It's ridiculous. We talked about, as well, the dynamics of sexual assault, knowing that 9 out of 10 people, 90% of people know their assailants. They know their aggressors. Okay, so this is not the creeper in the room. This is the people that we know. This is our friends, our coworkers, our regulars. We do have to be able to pay attention to that. We do talk a little bit about the pattern of assault when we're doing the full training, but one of the biggest things that comes from the pattern of assault is isolation. It's a step in the pattern. So there's selecting your target, testing the target, isolating the target, aggressing, and then following up. How might testing look? What is an aggressor testing after they've selected their target? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. So can be testing what they can get away with. What else is the aggressor testing?
Boundaries.
Yep. We've got boundaries of the person that they're targeting. What else are they testing? The environment. The environment that we are creating for our guests, right? So they're testing what they can get away with. Who's looking? Who's watching me? So those are really important things to take into consideration. The next one on there is isolation. So I want you to think about your respective spaces. And I know we've got sales in here too, so think about when you're on the road and you're on calls. Where are places in your respective environments where someone could be isolated? Where a target could be isolated by the aggressor?
A walk-in cooler.
Walk-in cooler. You can scream and nobody will hear you for when it's the worst shift in the world, and also people just can't hear stuff, right? So walk-ins. What else?
Office.
Office, yep. What else?
Bathrooms.
Absolutely. What else?
Parking lots,
1,000%, or we'd even say the back of the house, or like wherever the dumpsters are, where trash is. What else? Anything you can think about?
In a vehicle.
Yep, isolating in vehicle, ride-alongs. Mm-hmm, absolutely. Any space can be a place where someone is isolated. Someone could be, I don't know if any of your respective spaces are like a place where people can dance on a floor or something like that, but people can be isolated in plain sight as well. So when you go back to your breweries, wherever you go back to where home base is, think about and take a look around for where people might potentially be isolated. Share that with your team. Share that so they have that awareness. They're looking, they're seeing, they're being able to be more conscientious of the spaces that they navigate every day. Because it's so normal for us, we're in there all the time, we don't think about it. And for someone like a salesperson, you have to be even more adept thinking about, who am I going on a ride along with? Do I get to bring somebody? Who did I get to notify? Where are spaces when you're going into different unique spots in which you're, buyers, like, every buyer is going to be a little bit different. So you're even more astute and aware of all the spaces, right? So thinking about that is really important too. Now, this is a question that is super important to me because of the nature of what we do. But in how many reported cases of sexual assault do you think alcohol is involved? Is it 25%, 50%, 75%, 100%? 50? Anybody else? 75? Okay. 50% is correct. So alcohol is involved in 1 out of 2 sexual assaults. It is the most widely used drug to facilitate sexual assault. It is in all of the drug-related things. 96% is related to alcohol, and only 4% is other drugs, right? Do you think alcohol causes sexual assault? Hell no. No, 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 1,000 times, fuck no. Alcohol does not cause sexual assault. Alcohol is used by an aggressor as a way to camouflage their own behavior or incapacitate a target, all right? But alcohol is one of those things that is always brought up and always made for the people who are aggressed upon, the targets of this violence. They're made to feel shamed for their role in imbibing. We know that we are working in the alcohol industry, all right? We're not beating around the bush about that. We're absolutely fine with that. We create delicious products that we are trying to safely serve and have people imbibe as safely as possible. If you are drinking, if you have been drinking, if you've been imbibing, if you've been enjoying yourself, you can be dancing naked on one of these tables and you will not be assaulted if there is not an aggressor present to assault you. Does that make sense? It is not the cause. It is not the cause. Alcohol does not cause sexual assault. I usually have a slide up here that I make people shout, stand up, and like read at the top of their lungs, and I was like, send that with the world! We know what we're doing. We know what we're producing. We want people to safely enjoy what we're doing, but it does not cause any of these assaults to happen. When that comes up, we want to be conscientious of the people that are in our establishments. If they've been drinking, great. People can still give consent when they've been drinking. It is the point in which they go from imbibing to incapacitated that we have to pay more attention and look for that. And we'll talk about some of those behaviors that we're looking for where we know that it's gone to a place where somebody might not be able to give consent anymore, and that's where we need to be even more alert, have our bartender, beer tender, bat ears up, and pay attention for everything that's going on. So with that, we're going to talk about just going right into that. So how can you tell if someone's not okay? This can be patrons. This can be your own coworkers. How can you tell if they are not okay with the interaction that they're having? If they're with somebody else, somebody's talking to them, perhaps they were on a date, perhaps they're talking to a guest. How do you know something is not okay? There's a couple of samples up here, but what have you noticed in your time in this industry? Body language. Can you go into that a little bit more for me? Sorry, I know you're taking a drink of water right now. Yeah. Correct. Yep. So body language would be absolutely turned towards one another. Perfect. What else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you all seen the help me eyes, the zombie eyes, the like deer in the head, not really deer in the headlight. It is like, who can I make eye contact that will help me? Those eyes tell you everything. So we're always, I know our ears are especially very tuned in if we're working behind a bar, because we can hear everything. The way that acoustics are designed, we hear every very bad interaction, hilarious interaction, and everything in between. But our eyes need to be up scanning as well, because there might be somebody scanning back for us. We will assume for the first two things, number one, the body language will be reciprocal. People will be turned towards one another if they are enjoying that conversation, if everything is okay. Their eyeballs will also be turned towards one another if everything is okay. Eye contact, body language. What else? Mm-hmm. Are you shrinking down to shrivel away? Mm-hmm. Yep, lots of that. Are we looking for, are they small? Are they big? Are they fidgety? Fidgety, you need to take a little bit into consideration, because I'm super fidgety because of ADD. But very much that, like, are they shrinking, trying to melt away and get out of whatever they're at? What else? Mm-hmm. Yes. So stress response is very, very big in there. Has everybody heard of fight, flight, or freeze in terms of the stress response? Do you know what you are? Is it contextual, context specific? Have you heard of fawn? F-A-W-N. Fawn is another one that is not spoken about nearly as much as it deserves to be, but fawn is us smiling, giggling, uncomfortably moving around, and perhaps still looking like we're having an okay time, but we're not. Fawn is another natural safety mechanism where the person is trying to placate the behavior of the person they're interacting with. Okay? And fawn seems to get, fawn gets assigned stereotypically to women, and then they're also blamed for that behavior as, well, that didn't show us that you were not having a good time. That's exactly what it is. Because that still isn't matching up with the rest of the body language. So I'm looking for one more thing of the three things that we're looking for when we know that there's something going on in this interaction. Yep. A 100%. Yep. That incapacitation. And what does the incapacitation look like? Yep. She did it right there. Head on the bar. Mm-hmm. That's a good sign as well. That in and of itself means that that's a safety concern for us, and we want to make sure that that person's okay. One more thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about physical in general. Physical contact. If there's a touching on the leg, we expect, like, a holding of the hand. Or if there's a hug, I expect that person to, like, reciprocate that hug. I'm looking for reciprocal eye contact, reciprocal body language, reciprocal physical contact. If any one of those three are not present, I am hyper alert, even more alert than I already was. And add that incapacitation on top of it, I'm always looking, because I want people to be safe and enjoy their time with me. I usually work, now I've leaned more towards, I work high volume events. So lots of people, lots of access to excess, lots of opportunity for that to happen. So I want to see those three things measuring up, connecting, reciprocating every single time. And if I don't, I am absolutely tuned into this group. Okay? Anything else that you've seen over your time? Anything else that's like a dead giveaway? We've got the eyes. We've got the body language. Does that feel kind of all of what you've seen in your time? Yep, absolutely. Someone who's totally not allowing you to get a word in edgewise. I also see when people order drinks for somebody else or a large group of people. I'm paying attention to that. Number one, is the person with you and they're not allowed to speak because it's a one-sided thing? Are you only ordering the highest ABV beer and in large amounts because you're taking it to this table that seems like they're kind of like not having a great time now that you've decided to become a part of their group? We're always looking for all those little things that seem like subtleties beforehand are subtleties that are big signs. They're not subtle. They're huge. They're dead giveaways. All right. Want to actually learn the ways in which we can intervene and then do role plays? Yeah. Yeah. So we work within the 5 D's. What we teach people to do are these safe, non-confrontational things. We have direct, distract, delegate, document, and delay. Both of these can be done with the aggressor and the target. So you actually have 10 different ways in which you can get involved. It is super, super easy. And I don't mean to downplay that. It's not easy. It's just not as kind of a big to-do as maybe we have some preconceived notions about. So direct is very much letting the people know that you are aware that you're there, you think there might be a problem, and you're presenting yourself. Does anyone know? I won't try to do that to you. Here's 2 examples of direct. Direct can be as simple as, how's your night going? How's your night going? What we say to every single person, hi, how are you doing? How's your night going? Something that we say 1,000 times a night if we're behind the bar. Something we say just by being normal, cordial humans. That is a direct intervention strategy because the response that you get can kind of tell you where you go from there. Another direct intervention could be saying to the aggressor, that behavior is not tolerated. That's not cool. I saw that. That's not cool. Or to the to the target, I saw that. It's not okay. It's not your fault. All of those are very simple, direct things. And I'm saying it in a very, like, matter-of-fact kind of way. But you find out your own. You work with your own cadence. You work with your own normal vocabulary. I'm a person that talks in movie quotes. Obviously, I did a Letterkenny quote. Like, I talk in more kind of jokey things like that, but it's very clear the communication that I am delivering at that point in time. So you figure out what kind of works for you in the direct world. Distract. I think a lot of us in this industry are very direct people, but it might feel more comfortable to distract people. That is disrupting the energy, disrupting the flow of whatever's going on. That can be, oh my God, those shoes are amazing. Where did you get them? To an aggressor, hey, there's something wrong with your credit card. It's saying it's declined. I'm so sorry. Could you step over here for a second? Total lie, but you're getting them. They're like, what the? No. Or if they didn't give you a credit card, like, be situational about it. Hey, they're towing cars in the parking lot. You want to go out there and check and see what's going on? I did a training last week where some guy said that he went up to a drunk person and was like, cops are coming! Cops are coming! We've got to go right now! And the guy just like ran out with him and then he locked him out and went back inside. Like, distraction is your happy point. You can get real creative. The only limitations are your brain of what do you want to come up with. Hey, do I know you from my pottery class? It could be, I will spill water on myself. Like, water's great. Like, anything to divert the attention back to you, so they're looking at you and you can kind of assess the situation more, all of that can be done. Distraction with the target could be something like, hey, I know you were asking about the bathroom. It's open now. You want me to show you where that is? Oh, sorry, I forgot to close you out when you told me to. Here it is right now. It's like any of that could be used. One of my other training partners loves to go on like a diatribe. He does a filibuster about how Jar Jar Binks is the worst character from Star Wars ever, and like we'll do it for 5 minutes to the point where people are like, just shut up, I'm leaving, okay? Right? So all of those are options. Delegating. Delegating can be tagging in someone else who is in a better position than you to help out at that moment. And that could be for a multitude of reasons. So for the aggressor, you could be like, hey, can you go to the friends? Like, hey, can you come get your pal over here? They're being a little extra. Delegating to the friends. You could delegate to a bouncer if you have security, right? It doesn't mean you have to go to the owner, even though the owners that are here, like, we want you to be there, we want you to set the tone and the standard. We want your people to be empowered to do this on their own. It could be, depending on how you identify or how you present, it might be better if your coworker was there. Like, if I'm working with a group of, if my coworker is a larger man and he's working with a group of smaller potential people who are presenting as women, who are arguing, who something's going on, he might be like, hey, Amy, can you help out with this? Absolutely. Love to. I also consider myself a drunk whisperer, and I can talk anybody out of drinking ever again. So my friends who are dealing with, my coworkers who are dealing with a very intoxicated person will come into me, and I will sweet talk that person right into, like, water and going to bed. Anything. Delegating. You can do that in any way. Document. So if someone is already helping out, if you all want to come in, you're more than welcome to. We're about to do some fun activities. Document. If somebody else is already helping out in the situation, or you don't feel comfortable getting involved, perhaps there's a safety issue, is there a weapon, like anything like that, document everything. You write down any critical information, date, time, location, anything that people are wearing, whatever that might be. Anything that helps you, especially if you have an incident report that needs to be filed based upon whatever your standards are within your business. All of that's super helpful. And it's helpful for the target in case they want to be able to file any kind of charges. Within Safe Bars, we're generally steering you away from getting police involved because police have a tendency to escalate every situation. They also do not help targets in a very helpful way. So you do all the documentation so that the target can make a choice, an informed choice as to what they want to do with the information. Documenting can also be video, recording things on your phone. If you are having this happen in your establishment, that is a privately owned establishment. You can basically assume smile you're on camera when people walk into your brewery, so you can record that. There are other states where you are outside of the brewery. Perhaps you're at a festival or something like that. You can say, I am taking this video for my own safety. So if you need to do that, especially if you are a person who is not white and need to protect yourselves even more, that is a great thing to be able to do. That video, if you ever take a video, you do not post it. You do not share it. You ask the target if they want it. Targets can be doxed. The internet is an ugly place filled with trolls that do horrible things. So do not re-aggress upon the target by sharing that video without their consent. If they tell you to post it and you've got explicit consent, you may. But none of that goes anywhere except to the target. Yeah. For the trafficking, you can also take, like, anytime you're in your own establishment, take pictures, take photos. If you have cameras, go to the cameras. If you don't have cameras, please consider investing in cameras for your establishment. Always do that. In your establishment, you are protected and able to take pictures and photos. Outside of your establishment is the only time where you need to be considered about your state-specific laws about what's going on. No, because also we saw the most recent thing I can think of was like maybe 2 months ago in Philadelphia where a woman was getting assaulted on the train and somebody just took a picture or took a video and posted it rather than actually doing anything progressive about it. Absolutely unacceptable. The last one is going to be delay. And for delay, you can think about that as a direct approach after the fact. So if you can't get involved in that moment because you are either slammed or you didn't feel comfortable getting involved, following up, hey, I saw what happened. If you need someone to talk to, please let me know. I'm here for you. Hey, I saw that. It was not okay. That's not your fault. Can I help you? Anything like that. We do this because, and intervention is so important, even if it has to be after the fact, the way in which a target is spoken to or interacts with people immediately after something has happened makes a huge impact on their ability to recover from that incident and how severe of PTSD they will experience. So you can actually help somebody by saying, I saw that, it's not your fault, even after it's done, right? That is validating the experience of the target. That is returning their agency, returning their autonomy, returning any kind of power that was just stripped from them, okay? So what I'd like to do now, very quickly, we're going to try to do a couple little role play scenarios. So can I have everybody stand up and you'll come to the front of the room with me? And I want a couple people to go shoulder to shoulder with me. Pick one of these circles and just stand in them. And then I want everybody to have a partner matched in front of them. So you would be my partner on that circle, right? So circles, circles. And if we want to keep it more safe, we can do every other circle. I'm going to remove myself from this spot so somebody can go here and I will tell you what's going on. Here you go. Circle, circle. Love it. Does everybody have a partner? You're getting there? Good, good, good. Elena, would you mind if I took you out of this one since you know how to save bars? Sorry. Okay. So I'm going to give you all a scenario and you're going to actually practice using your words on how to interact and intervene in the situation. So, this group, this line, raise your hand for me. You are going to be the interveners, okay? This group, raise your hand for me. You all are going to be targets. Here is the situation. You are just working at a festival. All of you are working at a festival, right? That person from earlier who was being so nice to you because you were giving samples has now become a fairly aggressive person because it's last call and it's time for you to go home. So that aggressor who is imaginary right now has aggressed upon our targets, the noble people behind the tent and the stand giving out beer samples. I want this group to directly intervene with the target. Saw that, that's not okay, whatever. All right, ready, set, go. I'll move away if you feel gross. Sorry, thank you. All right, break. Let's reverse that. So the previous line that was just the targets, you are now going to intervene. Same scenario. This line are your targets. They just had that boneheaded human who's like, fuck you, I want more beer. And they're upset. So like, show you're upset, you're slumped over, you're a little upset. Now again, I would like for you all, that line, previous targets, you're going to directly intervene with your people. Go. All right, break. Next one. Going back to the original interveners on this side, okay? This side, you're now that jerk aggressor who was just yelling at the beer tent person, being an a-hole. You all are going to intervene by distracting these aggressors. So put on your mean face, put on your drunken goober face. Try to pretend you're an aggressor, but never do it in real life. Go.
What do you mean it's last?
It's always fun to figure out who is a theater person.
What do you mean? I thought you were cool. I thought you were funny.
All right, last one. Break. We're reversing it. This, you're back into like the awesome state of intervener awesomeness, and you all are aggressors at the beer fest who are like, I'm not done drinking. Distract. Go. Good job. Go ahead and return to your seats. I'm going to ask you how that went once you're sitting down. Okay. Nobody is crying, so that's a good sign. What worked? What didn't work? Did that feel gross, or did that actually feel like good to get it out and be able to say it? Anybody, shout it out. Yeah, it's really not great. Usually we do a demo, because this is usually a two-person demo, and we're like, all right, who's going to do it this time? I don't want to be the aggressor. I usually just go for drunk woo girl, because that's like the only thing that I can do. Well, you have lots of acting experience, I can tell, because that was fantastic. Somebody peed their pants, somebody, like... But in terms of your intervening... Did it feel as kind of awkward as you thought it might? Super uncomfortable, but was it as involved or over the top as what might have been preventing you from getting involved in the first place? Yeah, being a, oh my God, are we that? We're people, holy shit. Yeah, and also very quickly that it happened too, right? It really didn't have to take like a holy crap, what am I doing? So that's why I gave you that distract with the aggressor and direct with the target. Because and it's also really fast, and we spend a lot more time on this. Distract is generally people's comfort zone. I am direct. I am over the top direct, so like, but I have to cater and turn on the distract sometimes because I know that my direct can come off as aggressive to another drunk person. I'll be like, oh, sweetie, no, you're fine. I'm so sorry. We're done for today, but if you want to come back tomorrow, I'll give you all the beer you want. No, you cannot have my number, but I can tell you about the happy hour specials, right? So it does not, none of these have to be specific. You don't have to do every single one. You find the ones that work for you, right? You find the strategies that work for you. You practice them. You come up with a couple of lines that would feel the best given the situation, given the level of safety that you might be able to incur or not have, and go from there. You don't have to do all of them. Just find something. Even, like, we're not going to practice delegating or tagging someone else in because that's something you can do much easier in real life. So we practice these two, the direct and the distract, which could be difficult to begin with, but get easier over time. Anybody else? Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I can't hear you right here. You mind stepping over to this point that has an X on the spot, but you don't know that because I'm right in the line of the camera? Like, all those things are really good ideas, too. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yes. And if you've tried, if you feel comfortable, you've tried it, it didn't work, sometimes it might be a delegating. You can mix and match all of these. You can try just one. You can do them all. It does not matter. There is not a prescription to how to do this. It's just knowing what options you have and being able to implement them without, like, thought, like going through all the process. I tried direct, that didn't work. Let me try a joke. Nope, distract didn't work. I'm going to go tag in this person, and I will start documenting things. I'll follow up with the target later. All of that can be done. And remember, it's just as simple as, how are you doing? How's everything going? Everything all right over here? That's simple. That's as simple as it needs to be. So the last thing to follow up on, we had talked a little bit about what happens when somebody actually comes up to you and says, hey, this person's bothering me. Number one, you take them seriously. You do not say, what do you want me to do about it? You say, I'm so sorry that happened. How can I help you? You're trying to let them determine the way in which they want the rest of their night to go, because we know that since we are just in a power dynamic situation, they just had their agency challenged. They just had their authority challenged. So they need to be in charge of what happens from there. After that, you ask clarifying questions if it's necessary. Again, letting them decide what to do, and you stay with them every step of the way. We're not going to retarget them by letting them go walk off on their own to the parking lot. If they're going to be getting into a car, we're going to help get them to that car. If they want to just sit down and have a quiet place for a bit, we're going to let them do that. We're going to stay with them. If we cannot, because we're so busy, we, one, try to get somebody to come in and take our spot so we can do that, or we ask that person, hey, would it be okay if I had my friend over here come and sit with you while I try to navigate the rest of the night, right? So believe them. Ask clarifying questions only if it's necessary. Stay with them every step of the way. Yep. You take people seriously. Obviously, if they had to come to you and say something was happening, it's got to be really serious. So we take them seriously. We stay with them every step of the way. We try to get them to figure out how they'd like the rest of their night to go. And if that's by, hey, did you drive? Would you like me to call somebody for you? Those kind of questions, totally fine. Not saying, I'm calling the cops, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. That's just re-traumatizing, retargeting them there. So I know this was like a super brief version of what we do for Safe Bars. We didn't get to get into everything. But please check us out, safebars.org, info@safebars.org. I've got my cards up here. I'll be out in lunch if anybody wants to talk to me. I also got sessions. I don't know who I'm talking to yet, but I know I've got my micro sessions that are coming up afterwards. But I'd love to be able to talk to you more about what we do and if we can help you out and, you know, however we can keep getting our spaces as safe as possible. I really appreciate you all being here. Thank you so much for engaging, for interacting and role-playing, and for being here to learn and co-create this information. Let us continue to go forth and kick all the ass and make this a better industry one intervention at a time. All right, thank you so much.